Kia ora, Kofu Smithaho. Nga mai ki te whare, welcome to the house. It's nearly 30 years since New Zealand had its first MMP election. Changing to a fairer, more representational electoral system changed many things about how Parliament works as well, and left many oddities of the old Parliament behind. But it still does have traces of the old presumption that there are just two parties, one in government and one in opposition. And one of those is the term leader of the opposition, which kind of presumes that the leader of the Labour Party, Chris Hipkins, also has some sort of sway over the Green Party and Te Pāti Māori, which seems unlikely. I've often wondered exactly what the role of leading the opposition, or even part of it, involves. So I sat down, a couple of weeks ago now, with Chris Hipkins to try and find out. But first, that odd title, leader of the opposition.
We still have an adversarial parliamentary system, so we still sit opposite one another in the parliamentary debating chamber. And typically speaking, the leader of the government is going to be the leader of the largest party, and the leader of the opposition is going to be the leader of the largest non-governing party, which will normally be the second largest party. In fact, it always has been in, certainly in New Zealand's post-war history. Perhaps actually there was one exception in 2017. The second largest party led the government and the largest party led the opposition. You know, that's one of the possibilities of MMP.
Despite the title, I would imagine that the other opposition parties would be against the idea of you being their leader or leading them. Do you have any sort of cross-party role in the opposition?
There is still a certain constitutional role of being leader of the opposition, in the sense that you are part of the constitutional framework of the country in terms of continuity of government. So the government is continuous, but where the government is having to deal with issues that relate to a previous government, for example, release of information that relates to a previous government, then we still, as the opposition, have a constitutional role in that process. So, you know, they still have to consult with us on those kind of things. So there's some areas like that. There's still an expectation at certain events that there will be a balanced representation from government and opposition, and typically that will be the Prime Minister and the leader of the opposition. So there are still some sort of formalities associated with that role.
You still turn up to things like the opening of Parliament to sit on the other side to show that you're still loyal to the King and all that sort of thing.
That's right. In an adversarial system, there will always be a government and there will always be an opposition. You can also have interesting arrangements with the parties that are not part of the government and not the opposition. In some cases, they'll have, you know, cooperative arrangements with the government. You don't tend to have that with the opposition. You know, the opposition has a quite separate role from government.
Yeah. There are, within Parliament's rules, quite a few places where it says, and someone will be appointed by the leader of the opposition, that you get sort of automatic placements on security committees and things like that. Is that right?
That's right. So there are a variety of different provisions in law that invite me to nominate people for different positions and so on. In some cases, I can just nominate them. In other cases, I need to consult with the other non-governing parties before I can nominate somebody. But at the end of the day, someone has to do that. So if you want to have some balance in the parliament, then the leader of the largest non-governing party is the logical person to be the lead on that process, hence the title leader of the opposition.
Yeah. Do we still use the term here, or is it a very British thing and not a New Zealand thing, His Majesty's loyal opposition?
The National Party tend to use that a bit more. There's a few more monarchists, I think, on that side of the aisle than there are on our side of the aisle. Although, you know, I'd describe myself as a sort of a reluctant Republican. In theory, I like the idea of a republic. In practice, I actually think the monarchy works quite well for New Zealand. The theory's great, you know, one day it'll hopefully happen. But I also don't see any pressing need for it to happen. And so, yeah, we are technically, you know, His Majesty's loyal opposition.
Regarding the other parties in the opposition, though, do you take a sort of a role in coordinating with them or sort of trying to sort of bring everyone together to sort of face in one direction?
You know, opposition parties will coordinate with one another on an informal basis, on a regular basis. You know, when we were last in opposition, I was the opposition chief whip. And, you know, that one of your jobs is really to be on top of what the other parties are doing. So are they supporting the government or opposing the government on different pieces of legislation? Are we voting together? Are we coordinating or are we not? Because there'll be instances where we're not. We're taking different positions. But the whips and the shadow leader of the House will play a key role in pulling that together.
People get to see you mostly either as a sort of a talking head on the television or the radio, as a sort of a face of the party, or in question time, where on a Tuesday and a Wednesday you would typically ask questions of the Prime Minister. But that's not very much of your week. What does the rest of the week look like for a Leader of the Opposition?
I think one of the challenges of the role is to the public, from the outside looking in, it can appear a very antagonistic role, because what they'll typically see of me is where I'm criticising the government or I'm questioning the government and so on. That is actually a relatively small part of the role of Leader of the Opposition. The other part is to prepare an alternative government and to actually be putting forward an alternative proposition. Where you are in the electoral cycle determines how much of that the public will see. So a lot of the work that we're doing at the moment around that, preparing an alternative government, isn't actually in the public view. It's policy work that we're doing. It's getting out amongst people who have ideas and who want to be involved in that process and talking to them. That, by definition, means you're not out there sort of selling a new idea to people, because you've got to determine what that is first. The closer you get to an election, the more that starts to flip around and you start to see change there, and you'll start to see us more assertively putting forward the proposition rather than just the opposition.
Oh, nice use of... Yeah, OK. But on a practical level then, the week?
Oh, so in a week, I'll typically be here on a Monday doing internal stuff. Plus also the Prime Minister does his post-cabinet press conference. Whatever the government's big announcement is for the week will be announced on a Monday, and so I'm there to respond to that. On a Tuesday and a Wednesday, I'm normally here at Parliament.
You're in the House on those days.
I'm in the House on those days. On a Thursday and a Friday, I'll normally be out and about, either locally or around the country, and often a combination of both of those things.
And that's for... Well, sometimes that would be public-facing stuff and sometimes it wouldn't be, I suppose. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a mix of things. So tonight I'm off to the Building Nations conference dinner. Then I'm speaking to that conference tomorrow. I'm then speaking to a Business After Five event in Auckland tomorrow evening. Then on Friday I'm back in Wellington also speaking to a conference and a variety of other smaller engagements as well. Some of those will just be more informal. Across the weekends, you'll often find there's a lot of events in the weekend that I'll attend. A lot of our community groups, ethnic groups, various other community groups will have events in the weekend. And they're often quite big events where I'll be invited to go along and sometimes to participate and sometimes to speak. It really depends on the nature of the event.
So it's a little bit like being, as you were an electorate MP, as you are an electorate MP. It's the same thing, but on a slightly larger scale.
It is on a larger scale, that's right. So, I still do my own electorate things. One of the things about not being Prime Minister is I get to do a little bit more of that, not as much as I used to do, because I still have to balance that out with the importance of attending big national events as well around the country.
To what extent is your role a kind of a CE role, a chief executive role, being the leader of the team, of the people?
In opposition... The leader of the opposition, or the leader of, in this case, the leader of the Labour Party, you have to lead the Labour Party. We had a team of MPs who hadn't experienced opposition before after we lost the last election. So many of them had come in during that time we were in government. So that was all they knew. And so, as leader of the opposition, you have to help them make that transition to being an opposition MP. It's an entirely different job to being in government. And you have to provide direction and focus to that work. So that's one of the many components of this job.
Because it's a very different skill set, isn't it? I imagine you have to sort of retrain everyone to do a different job.
Yeah, you have to sort of retrain people. You have to point them in the right direction. You have to help people when they're on a roll. You have to help people if they're struggling to get on a roll. And you also want to make sure the team is cohesive and working together and really shaping the team into a viable alternative government. I do think that a big part of the thing that people look at when they make their decisions about how to vote is, do they look like they're ready? Do they look like they'd be a good government? And so part of the job of the leader of the opposition is to make sure that the answer to that question is yes, we are ready and we would be a good government.
It's always seemed to me, watching people come and go while I've been here, that it is an easier job to create a cohesive team in opposition than it is in government. Because in government, half your team are doing something else, being ministers, and the other half have kind of got very little to do at all. But in opposition, you've got the time to really kind of create something as a unit.
Time in opposition can be a blessing and a curse. It gives you more opportunity to think about ideas, to get out and speak to people, but it also creates more opportunity for distraction. So if you look at opposition's past, they've often ended up arguing with each other rather than arguing with the people who sit on the other side of the debating chamber. I'm really proud of the fact that our team has avoided that. We are very much focused on arguing with the government, and I think we've still got an amazingly cohesive sense of teamwork here. If anything, that's grown since we went from government to opposition, and that's pretty unusual in a new opposition. Normally oppositions will go through a period of, you know, fighting with each other rather than fighting the government. Our team hasn't done that and isn't going to do that. We're pretty resolved about that.
Yes, it's true. Sort of everyone spends the first year or two sort of lost in Kubler-Ross's stages of grief and adding infighting as an extra stage.
Yeah, and we haven't done that, and I think that's a tribute to our team. You know, we're pretty focused on making this a one-term government, and that means we've got not one day to lose. We haven't got time for that, and we're not interested in doing that.
Tell me about the policy development part of that that you mentioned. Is that something you sort of delegate to everyone in their responsibility areas, or is there sort of meetings where everyone kind of brainstorms, or how does it work?
So in opposition, everybody has a role in policy development. You know, spokespeople will take the lead in their areas. They'll be working with committees of volunteers within the party who have an interest in that, who want to contribute ideas, and in some cases bring a lot of expertise to that process. And that's really valuable for you in opposition, because unlike in government, where you've got the whole of the public service who can bring you the expertise and the perspectives that you might need, you don't have that in opposition. So you do rely a lot more on those volunteer networks. And in some cases, you know, some of those volunteers aren't always party members either. They're people who care deeply about an issue who will say, I'm happy to put my hand up and give you a bit of a hand to pull some ideas together in this area.
Okay. So that is not just the people in the building then? That's actually quite wide?
Oh, you can have quite a wide network. In some cases, it'll be, you know, different NGO groups. Say we were taking up the policy around environment, for example. Mm-hmm. You'll get groups like Forest and Bird and Greenpeace and others submitting their ideas. Doesn't mean they're affiliated or aligned to the Labor Party. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to support what comes out the other end of it. But the sensible thing in opposition is to go and talk to them, because they'll give you ideas, they'll give you evidence, they'll give you a perspective. Doesn't mean you have to accept it, but it does actually help in opposition to do those things.
Interesting. Where I'm picturing you sort of trying to lead a group of people inside Parliament to create a prospective government, you're more talking about actually doing that on a much wider scale, sort of pulling in a lot of aspects of the country.
Absolutely. So I've made it a real priority for our team to get out and speak to and hear from a really broad cross-section of Kiwis. So if you're talking about environmental policy, let's go back to that example. Yeah, I do want you speaking to the environmental groups, but not only them. I want you to go and talk to people on the other end of that. So who are the people who are holding the consents and what are their perspectives on it? And so, you know, let's make sure we're hearing all of the voices as we shape up the policy that we've got for the next election.
What have I not talked about in terms of this role?
You do want to try and provide some stability and some bipartisanship on areas that are longer term if you can. So I look at the Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse in State Care. I think the whole country will be better off if we put aside our political differences and find a way forward there that recognises the survivors of abuse in state care and recognises what they need, and recognises how it was allowed to happen and puts in place mechanisms to stop that happening again. Because that work is going to span more than one government. We're talking about, you know, decades already of work in this. You know, some of those survivors spent decades fighting for justice. And the fact that the Royal Commission's delivered its report doesn't mean it's over. In fact, it just means the next phase of that work begins. There are some areas around infrastructure where I think we're going to have to think about how we do that differently. We can't just chop and change infrastructure spending when there's a change of government. And that's going to require compromise on both sides. One of the challenges is when the current government talk about that, they basically say, we want bipartisan consensus, just agree with everything we're doing and agree that you won't change it. That's not realistic. But on the other hand, we would be willing to have a conversation that says, well, here's some stuff that you might not necessarily want to do as the government, but we think is important. And in exchange for you supporting those things, we will support some of the things that you want. And then people can just get on with it and get it done. We're open to those kind of conversations, but bipartisanship's never going to be achieved by the side who's in government saying, just agree with everything that we're doing. There has to be compromise.
In America, they use the phrase reaching across the aisle. Does the government reach out to you? Do you reach out to the government? How does that work?
I've reached out to them on a few occasions, and certainly have on the Royal Commission of Inquiry on Abuse and Stake here. And there'll be other areas where we do that. But it has to be based on the idea that we're actually going to try and find a compromise, not on the basis that, oh, the opposition will just have to sign up to whatever the government's doing.
That was Chris Hipkins, leader of both the Labor Party and, in parliamentary terms, of the opposition. You've been listening to The House, a programme produced with funding from Parliament's Office of the Clerk. Matawa.